Welcome to Christian Philosophy. This is a very unusual course, let me say. In the whole history of Christianity, almost no major Christian thinker has thought that a Christian philosophy was even a possibility. It was possible for Christians to do philosophy, they held, of course. They could do philosophy, and over here they had their Christian faith, and they would try to make sure that their philosophy harmonized with their Christian faith. But they didn't see any way to construct a distinctively Christian take on philosophy. In fact, I'm going to read for you what one of them said. This is Father Copleston, a distinguished historian of philosophy. If philosophy is a legitimate and autonomous province of human study and knowledge, it would appear that it is not and cannot be Christian. It would sound absurd to speak of a Christian biology or a Christian mathematics. A biologist or mathematician can be a Christian, but not his biology or his mathematics. Similarly, it might be said, a philosopher can be a Christian, but not his philosophy. His philosophy may be true and compatible with Christianity, but one does not call a scientific statement Christian simply because it's true and compatible with Christianity. The most the phrase Christian philosophy can legitimately mean is a philosophy compatible with Christianity. If it means more than that, one is speaking of a philosophy which is not simply philosophy, but which is, partly at least, theology. All due respect to Father Copleston, I think that's exactly wrong, and that I can show that it is. But in order to do that, I have to do two things first. I have to explain what philosophy is, and to do that I'm also going to explain what a theory is, because a philosophy is a kind of theory. And then we have to know what religious belief is. We have to have a good working definition of religious belief. And once we get those two settled and clear, then I think it will become apparent that philosophical theories, as well as biology, mathematics, and any other kind of theory, all presuppose some divinity belief or other. And the contents of the theory turn out to be very different depending on what divinity belief they presuppose, including distinctively different if they presuppose God, the God that Christianity proclaims, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who came incarnate in the world, in Jesus Christ, to redeem the world. So let's start then with what's philosophy. And let me put it to you as a poser, a question for you to think about here. Over on the side of the board, I've written a number of areas, domains of study that have arisen. Some of them are called sciences, some are just domains of study or fields of inquiry or theory making, but they've been around for a long, long time, and I'm not going to quarrel with the list. This is just what people have presented studies in, starting with the fact that the reality as we experience it exhibits the fact that it has quantity. It can be counted. It can be calculated. It exhibits the fact that it's spatial. Things have spatial shape and location and size. It's kinetic. There is motion through space. Some people have included that under the physical. They put it as part of physics. But at least Galileo and Einstein thought it was distinct. Physical, sensory, we perceive things. They have color, they're smooth or rough or hot or cold, sounds are loud or soft. We also see that the world around us conforms to logical laws. And logic is a special study. It's a procedure now to check arguments to make sure that they're valid when they're given. That is, that if the premises are true, the conclusion must also be true. Formative or historical. That is, this has to do with making artifacts, taking a natural material and turning it in, making it into something new. And that, I think, is the key to history as well. History isn't everything that happened in the past. When we study, say, the Battle of Waterloo, we're not concerned with what the farmers did to try to get their crops in out of the way of the battle that they saw coming. That doesn't count as part of the battle. It's not anything that somebody thinks is historically important. But what is important is the way people form a culture and pass it on, and who holds the power to do that. That all has to do with what I call formative or historical. There's also the field of linguistics, sociology, economics, jurisprudence. There's aesthetics. And there's an ethical dimension to human experience. People experience things to be right and wrong, morally. And finally, I called the last one fiduciary. Professor Duiverd, whose theories are going to be the example Christian philosophy that I'm going to be explaining in this course, called that last one pistic. It's an odd term, but in Greek it means trust or faith. And fiduciary has to do with the trustworthiness of things. Often that's calculated by probability, but it's certainly a dimension of human experience. So if all of these are already studied, and people have distinguished them and written about them and formulated theories to explain different phenomena in them, what's left for philosophy? Is it, after all, just a ruse to keep us out of the unemployment office? Some people might suspect that, but it's not true, actually. When I pose this to my students, usually they're a little puzzled at first, but somebody eventually says, is philosophy about how all of them hang together? Is it how they all relate? And I say, you get the gold star. Exactly. That's exactly what it's about. And there are two kinds of theories that do that, that deal with the whole of these, that go after the what's true of reality generally rather than specifically. Let's think of each of these as a specific dimension or side to reality as we experience it. But then there are two theories that go after the entirety, the characterization of the whole of reality. The first is called ontology. That's its proper name, and it's probably a word you never heard, but you may have know it by its nickname, metaphysics. That is a term that sounds somewhat esoteric to many people, but it's actually a very ordinary one. What happened was that after Aristotle died, his nephew started to edit his work and publish it. And they finished his book on physics, and then they came to the next book, which was on theory of reality, and it didn't have a title, and they didn't know what to call it. So they called it the book that comes after the physics. That's what metaphysics means. Meta is the Greek word for after. So they didn't actually give it a title. And over the years, calling it that became the name of what Aristotle did in that work, in other words, ontology, and so it's an alternative term for it. Let me see if I can make this clear with an analogy of what it is that philosophical theory does here. It looks at all these different sides to reality, and it asks, but what is the most basic characterization of the reality of which these are all different sides? The metaphor I sometimes use is that of a necklace. If these are the beads on the necklace, ontology wants to know, what is the string? What is it that hangs them all together, that has them merge and meld and qualify different things that we experience in such a way as that we have to pick these dimensions out in order to study them? But reality doesn't find one here and another there. These kinds of properties are true of all things. So that's what ontology is about. Now, some of you might right away be saying to yourself, oh no, don't tell me that. I have a tough enough time studying one of these. Or if somebody raises the question, how does one relate to another, that's bad enough. But now you want a theory, you want to talk about theories that relate them all. Let's say how they all hang together. And yeah, that's what philosophy is about. You're right. So I know that for some people, that's going to be an off-putting. It's going to seem daunting. Let me take you by the hand and walk you through it, and you'll find it isn't as daunting as you think. For other people, they will have a different reaction, I know. You're going to say, whoa, this is the kind of thing I've always wanted to do. So you're going to get the chance. What's the string? If these are the beads, what is the string? As philosophy first arose, it was done by pagans who didn't know God. Very bright group of them, however. What they always did, all of them did, was pick some one, or at most two, of what I'm calling the beads on the necklace, and made the claim, these aren't just beads, these are the string. It's this one that generates all the rest, and that's how they're all hooked together. This is the cause of all the rest. So that's the kind of thing that you can expect we'll be looking at, as done by non-Christians and then as done by Christians. So we'll ask, how should Christian do it? And that answer will be that such theories do depend on regarding something or other as divine. And that's either going to be the true and living God or some part of creation that's deified instead of him. That will become clear after the next installment of this course, the next lecture, which will be about what is religious belief. And once I make clear what a philosophical theory is and what religious belief is, I think it will become apparent why I had to have to disagree with Father Copleston here and say Christian philosophy can and ought to be a legitimate enterprise for Christians. But here's another way to characterize what ontology is about. And this was said by a famous philosopher of science from the last century, Wilfred Sellers. Philosophy is about how all things, he said, in the widest sense of things, hang together in the widest sense of hang together. That's also a very good way to put it, and he got it right on the nose. Now, there's a second kind of theory that deals with all of these, and that has to do not with the nature of reality, but the nature of knowledge. And that field is called epistemology. These all terms all come from Greek because it was the Greeks that first did philosophy. So epistemology has to do with knowledge. These are all different kinds of knowledge, as well as different kinds of characteristics we see the world around us exhibit. There's quantitative knowledge in mathematics. There's knowledge in physics and psychology, in logic and history, sociology, aesthetics and ethics. There are different kinds of knowledge as well. So how do you characterize knowledge itself in its most basic nature? And in order to understand how all these different kinds of it hang together and relate to what's most basic. And once again, these are the different disciplines that have been distinguished over the last few thousand years by different people. I'm not going to right now argue whether this list is correct or it needs to be changed or amended. I'm just going on the fact that this is what a great many people have written about. So, I hope that much is clear. And if it is, I want to now explain in a little more detail what a theory is. Since I've been saying theories are made within these different aspects of reality, and theories are made about how they all hang together, give you the big picture, but what do we mean by a theory? Fair enough. Theories replaced myths as a way to explain things. Until theories were invented, people tried to explain the world around them as best they could, mostly by likening it to human relations, interrelations. The heavens and the seas were at war and they hated each other, and when they fought then this occurred and that came into being and that kind of thing. Love and hate were in strife with one another and so on. If you've run into myths like that, you know what I mean. The first person we know of to have offered a theory to explain anything instead of a myth was an ancient Greek named Thales, who was born somewhere about 600 years before Christ was. And Thales wanted to explain things in terms of the characteristics the things themselves had and the laws they seemed to be subject to. And so he came up with theory making instead of myth making. Essentially, what happens is this. We observe a number of things that are true about the world around us. I'm going to use a super simple example. Let's say we can observe that if we take red paint and blue paint and pour it into a larger container and stir it up, it turns purple. Suppose we want to know why it turns purple. Sticking your head in the paint is not going to tell you. You can observe as closely as you wish, but it's never going to tell you that why the paint turns purple rather than green or orange or something else, or why it doesn't stay a mix of red and blue and not produce a new color, just blue with red polka dots or something. Suppose we want to know that. And now somebody puts forward the theory that goes roughly like this. Paint's actually made of tiny particles so small we can't see them. And the way the particles arrange themselves is the reason we see the paint as red or blue or then purple. In other words, clusters of molecules of one type reflect to our vision the purple, the blue wavelength of light. In the other paint, it reflects the red wavelength of light. And we pour the two together, the molecules clump up in another way such that it reflects the purple wavelength of light, and so that's what we see. Here's an explanation put into the middle of a puzzle. We know we have red paint. We know we have blue paint. We know that if we mix them, the paint turns purple. The question is, what other explainers are we going to stick into this? So we have blue paint, red paint. If we set this up like a logical argument, see, then we have 3, 4, 5. We know the paint turns purple. But what goes in here? What is it that we have to add to, we have blue paint, red paint, we mix them. What else is true such that it always turns out the paint turns purple? What do we stick in here? And what the guesses that we put in there, we call hypotheses. It's a fancy word for an educated guess. Here are our hypotheses, which, when added to these three statements, will logically yield that statement. Then we get a theory. There are other things we could put in here. Suppose I proposed the theory that there are invisible paint pixies. And paint pixies are annoyed with one another. The red ones hate the blue ones, and the blue ones hate the red ones. And when you mix them together, they spit purple at each other, and that's why the paint turns purple. That would not be a very good theory, but it's another possibility. See, it's our invention here, our guess as to what's going on. And of course, the guess about molecules is a lot better than the one about paint pixies. In philosophy of science class, I often ask a class when we get into the course a ways in to write a little essay on why. Just why is it that the molecular theory is better than the paint pixie theory? And that can be daunting. It's a challenge. There are good reasons. I'm not saying that paint pixies is as good a guess, but it's difficult sometimes for students to state what the differences are and why one's much better than the other. Now, I hope that this has given you some introduction to what's going to happen here. We're going to be looking for an ontology. We're going to look at all the different sciences or fields of study, fields in which theories are made, and we're going to ask, but how does the whole, the big picture, how does it all hang together? And we're going to want to, hypotheses as to how they all hang together. What it is the beads are all, what is the string all the beads are hanging on? That's the way philosophical theories were first set up. And by the way, when we come to do Christian theories, one of the first things I hope to show you is that regarding these as beads on the necklace and then picking one of them to actually be the string is precisely what I'm going to say no Christian should do. So I'm going to disagree with that way of doing it, even though that's how philosophy started out when it was first cooked up and 600 years before Christ. And we're going to still make hypotheses and we're going to make the theories, but it's going to be very different because they're going to be guided and led and limited by belief in God.